is Ty Carey. I thought it said Ty Curry. Yeah. Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveyan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mahvidvisha Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Okay. 32. Vrajana. How can Shakti said to be inconceivable if every activity she performs is subject to a hair-splitting analysis for comprehension by the intellect? Right? Because inconceivable, if you can understand it with the intellect, how is it inconceivable? Right? Especially if it's such a fine analysis, so the intellect can catch that. So how would then you say that it's inconceivable? Because the Chintya Shakti means inconceivable. Right? Raghunath Das, Babaji. The individual points of the subject matter of Shakti can be separately contemplated on, but as a whole, concerning their esoteric interrelationships and subtle juxtapositions, the Shakti of Sri Krishna is quite inconceivable to the human intellect. On this material plane, conflicting and contradictory natures cannot coexist in one place or in one person, because such contrasting natures mutually destroy one another. However, the Shakti of Sri Krishna is so inconceivable that the seemingly contrary emotions, nature, and qualities of the spiritual world eternally coexist harmoniously in pristine splendor. Sri Krishna is simultaneously personal with a beautiful form and impersonal with an awe-inspiring presence, both all-pervasive and embodied, inactive and dynamically creative, unborn and born of his parents, Devaki and Vasudeva, and Yashoda and Nanda, the Supreme Godhead worshipped by all, and yet a simple cowherd boy. Omniscient, yet accepting an incarnation that manifests human emotions. With form and qualities, yet also formless and unqualified. Beyond sense perception, and yet the personification of rasa. Unlimited, and yet limited by performing his pastimes as incarnations. Unattainable and far away, yet very near in the heart of everyone. Immutable and unconcerned, yet filled with consternation at the anger of the gopis. There are innumerable examples of how these apparently conflicting emotions sustain as well as accelerate the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Be it in regard to the personality of the Lord, his dham, his associates, or paraphernalia. The eternal harmony of these opposing aspects indicates the inconceivable status of a Shakti. Because it's through the Shakti that we understand these, or we know these. Right, we're able to perceive the manifestation through the Shakti. So that means the Shakti is inconceivable. Right? Because he is manifesting these qualities. It's his qualities. So that means the qualities themselves are inconceivable. That make sense? If he's inconceivable, it means his qualities are inconceivable. Right? So he has all these, so he can manifest all these contradictory qualities without a problem, right? Because he's the Supreme Lord. Right? So that manifestation is done through his energies. That means his energies are inconceivable. Does that make sense? Right? He's inconceivable, so that means his energies are inconceivable.
Alright.
Yes.
So both internal and external energies are inconceivable.
Yes, but specifically here, I think, yeah. But the point is this, the external is simply an expansion, a reflection of the internal. So it's the same thing, yeah. So it's otherwise, how does one understand? I mean, the big scientists are sitting there and thinking they found the atom, then there's things within the atom, and then they think this is it, and then they keep finding more and more. And according to the Shastra, it's the smallest thing that doesn't have any parts, that's an atom. So they haven't gotten to an atom yet. You know?
Yeah.
You know? Like that. You know, because before they said a molecule was an atom.
Right.
And then as they went, they started to see parts within it. So then they say, okay, so these parts of the molecule, those are atoms. And then the atom became the molecule. But now, I think with time, they'll have to find another term as they find that all these little parts are there. And then those make up the atom. So what's the difference between atoms making up? You know what I'm saying? So with time, it'll change. So it's inconceivable how everything works and everything like that. But the point is being made is on the material platform, you can't have these contradictory things functioning at once. It does this or it does that. But there it can do two at once. That's what the inconceivable is. Vrajanath, is that okay?
Yep.
Vrajanath, I have heard that the Supreme Lord is the endless source of rasa. Where is this mentioned in the Vedas? Right? Because being smarta, everything has to go back to the Vedas. That's the thing about smartas, is that they'll accept the Shruti, but they're very careful on what Smriti they accept. Right? So then naturally then the idea is that, okay, so where means we know, okay, Bhagavatam says this, that, but where does the Vedas say? Because we're saying everything goes back to the Vedas. Vedas are coming from Krishna. Krishna does everything according to the Vedas. So where does the Vedas say that he is the endless source of rasa? Raghunath Das Babaji, the following unequivocal statement is cited from the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. One who has been described in the previous verse of the Upanishad as the paragon of piety and merit is in truth para Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the embodiment of rasa. Only when the jiva is able to attain him, the rasa, sarup, the embodiment of spiritual mellows, can he be truly happy. Who could breathe without the Lord giving breath? Who could be happy without the Lord giving happiness? It is he who gives transcendental bliss. Yeah. Yes, Taittiriya Upanishad, this section is... this is Anandavali, which means the section that describes what is happiness. Right? So then it has to describe that source of this happiness, the supreme person. Vrajanath, kindly delineate in detail the embodiment of spiritual mellows. Who is described in the Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1, with the words, he himself is rasa, the taste or mellow of a particular relationship. Certainly one who achieves this rasa becomes filled with bliss. Raghunath Das Babaji. We come across these verses in the Gopal Tampa, Purva 13.1. Behold that ever youthful boy, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, dressed as a cowherd boy with eyes like lotus petals. His complexion is that of fresh monsoon clouds, and his aura shines more dazzling than the lightning bolt. He wears a brilliant golden yellow dhoti, lower garment. This is Gopaltapani Upanishad. He wears a golden yellow dhoti, lower garment. His two-handed form is most exquisite. He is omniscient, and a garland of wild flowers adorns his chest. Anyone who meditates upon this wonderful form of the Lord is immediately released from the shackles of samsara. Right, because, see, he is rasa, so whatever rasa one is tasting, then actually it is he who is the taste of that rasa. So the point is one who achieves rasa, that relationship with the Lord, he's actually fortunate. Because otherwise we think it's the rasas, the relationships of this world, right? Means relationships with devotees connected, you know, based on Krishna consciousness, then that's a transcendental relationship there. But relationships based on the bodily conceptions, then that's actually the taste of that is Krishna. Right? It means on the spiritual platform, even those rasas, it's still Krishna, but it's connected to Krishna in the way that you're directly seeing. Here are devotees, and they're discussing about Krishna, serving Krishna, so that's the taste. But on the material platform, you think it's this particular person, how they act and all that, then we have a particular relationship, we're getting a taste from that. But actually, the taste of that is Krishna. But we think it's the body. We think it's the personality. Like that. It's only the medium through which it comes. You know what I'm saying? You pick up the rock, it's cold, so you think the rock is the source of cold. Is the rock the source of the cold? No. Right? The weather is the source of the cold. Weather's hot, the rock's hot. Weather's cold, the rock's cold. Right? But we'll think, oh, the rock is the source of the cold. Right? So that's the point, is that you have a relationship. So you think the family members, those rasas, those are coming from them, but actually they're coming from the Lord. Right? So one who attains rasa with the Lord, then he's actually fortunate. That makes sense? Yeah. Vrajana. Now at last I have understood the truth that Sri Krishna alone is the absolute embodiment of complete perfection, eternally situated in the spiritual realm, the omnipotent supreme shelter of all living entities, the personification and repository of every transcendental mellow and relationship. He is unattainable for the monistic jnanis and only partially revealed as Paramatma to the mystic yogis pursuing the path of Astanga Yoga. Right? So he's only partially revealed. Right, the monists, they don't know him at all because they only know Brahman, so they don't know the personality of Godhead. Right? Impersonal Brahman is his bodily effulgence. He is the highest worshipable deity, the eternal and absolutely spiritual supreme person. Yet I cannot easily approach him because he is transcendental to intellectual interrogation. The question is, how can one see him? That remains a mystery. Raghunath Das Babaji. Dear son, the beloved Sri Krishna, the soul of all souls, is very merciful and the most precious. He is attained neither by merely scrutinizing the scriptures nor by the elaborate deliberations of philosophy, neither by being a talented clairvoyant with an incisive intellect, nor by having many gurus will one be crowned with success. The Lord shows his mercy and reveals his blissful form of transcendental majesty, eternity, absolute knowledge, and bliss to one who lovingly accepts him as his very own. Employing this mood of Abhideya Tattva will bring you home, back to Godhead. Yeah, so it's not by being a talented clairvoyant with an incisive intellect. So it means we've already discussed scrutinizing the scriptures, so analyzing the philosophy. These aren't how you'll know Krishna. This is how you're going to know about Krishna, but actually to know Krishna as a person, that's only by his grace. So then also being a clairvoyant, you know, being able to see so many things, it still doesn't work, right? And then having many gurus, because you learn this from this one, that from that one, this way you add it all up, and so you know so much, so that way you know Krishna. No, it's when you have devotion, that's what Krishna will be pleased with. Right? Lovingly accepts him as his own, very own, means Krishna is, he's our Lord. He's who we, you know, we have relationship with. Otherwise the tendency is, okay, we have our scene here, and then there's God. No, the relationships with God, relationships with God's creation. So then it becomes close. Yeah. Rajanath. Please explain why the Vaishnavas designate Navadvip as Sri Dharma.
Because it's a process?
Yeah, means employing this mood like that. So that means when you apply it. Right? Who lovingly accepts him as his very own. Employing this mood of Abhideya Tattva. So in other words, when you perform your service, you're performing it for Krishna because you want to please him, not because you have any alternative, because you have some, yeah, it means you have some motive or something, but you just want to please him because Krishna is ours. Right? It means, you know, if you have a friend, you want to please him. Right? So Krishna is ours, so then you'd want to please him. Raghunath Das Babaji, Sri Navadvip Dham is on the same spiritual level as Vrindavan Dham, and within Sri Navadvip Dham, the most sacred place is Sri Mayapur. Because the Sri Gokula of Braja is manifest as the Sri Mayapur of Navadvip. Sri Mayapur is the Mahayoga Peak, the eternal abode of Sri Radha and Sri Krishna, surrounded by the eternal and intimate associates within Sri Navadvip Dham. The Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.38 narrates Chanakalao. In Kali Yuga, the full incarnation of the Supreme Lord makes a covered appearance. Similarly, the same principles apply to Navadvip Dham. In Kali Yuga, Navadvip is the covered Dham. Kali Yuga, there is no Tirtha Yatra, pilgrimage. There is no Tirtha Yatra or pilgrimage superior to visiting Mayapur. Furthermore, only those who understand the transcendental significance of Mayapur are eligible to reside in Vrajadham. Vrajanath. But in other words, how Mayapur is not different from Vrindavan. Vrajanath, dear Master, I am eager to learn further about the spiritual significance and identity of Navadvip Dham. Raghunath Das Babaji, Goloka, Vrindavan, and Swetadvip constitute the inner sanctum of the Paravyoma, the entire spiritual sky. In Goloka, Sri Krishna performs his married conjugal pastimes. In Vrindavan, Sri Krishna enacts his conjugal pastimes as a paramour. And Swetadvip is the stage for the remaining pastimes of Sri Krishna. Spiritually, the three abodes are equal. So Navadvip, a direct manifestation of Swetadvip, is still equal to Vrindavan in every respect. The residents of Navadvip are immensely fortunate. They are the associates of Sri Chaitanya. On account of innumerable pious deeds, a person is promoted to reside in Navadvip. Certain aspects of rasa, which are not expressed in Vrindavan, find their expression in Navadvip. Only a person who has become qualified to understand these particular rasas will be able to perceive them. Navadvip Dham, and especially Mayapur, are so spiritually potent that anyone executing sadhana there, will very soon be crowned with the highest success by the attainment of Krishna Prema. Yeah. So Navadvip has that specialness because of that combined form of Radha and Krishna. That there's the aspect of that compassion, right? So that compassion is being displayed. Vrindavan is the sweetness, but in Navadvip it's the compassion. So devotional activities being performed here then very quickly give very great results. Right? So it's very special like that. Rajanath, Master, having explained earlier that the Chit Shakti, Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti are the emanations of the Sarup Shakti, again you said that Hladini, Samvit, and Sandini are the three aspects of the Sarup Shakti. Thus, all the activities of these three aspects, Hladini, Samvit, and Sandini, that act upon the three emanations, Chit, Jiva, and Maya, are in fact activities of Shakti. The spiritual world, spiritual body, spiritual relationships, spiritual pastimes, and so on, are also manifestations of Shakti. How then may Sri Krishna, Shaktiman Purush, the source of Shakti, be identified? Right? Does that make sense? Because in other words, he's saying that your your internal, external, and jiva are manifestations of the Chik Shakti, right? Expansions of them. And then you also have that the Samvit, Sandini, Hladini are three aspects, right? And by that, then all the different things are going on. So the spiritual world, the spiritual body, spiritual relationships, spiritual pastimes, all these are manifestations of the Chit Shakti, right? The Surup Shakti. So then how do you understand who is the Purusha, the Shaktiman of this Chit Shakti, since everything that you're seeing is Chit Shakti? Raghunath Das Babaji. Yes, my son. That is certainly a very difficult problem. It seems you plan to end the misery of this old man with your sharp arrows of tricky arguments. However, this simple question has an equally simple answer. Yet to find a suitable candidate to comprehend the answer is most difficult. Listen attentively while I answer your query. Right? In other words, it's a simple question, and it has a simple answer, but to be qualified to understand that simple answer, now that's another point. So he's getting finer and finer and finer, like these points that he says, you know. Yeah. Certainly the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna convincingly show the power of Shakti at play. Nevertheless, an independent prerogative and completely free will are not her privileges. The Supreme Lord alone possesses these exclusive privileges. Sri Krishna is self-willed and an autocrat. He is the master and shelter of Shakti. Shakti, the female counterpart of Sri Krishna, is meant to be enjoyed and utilized by him, the supreme enjoyer. Thus Shakti is dependent and subservient, while Sri Krishna is independent and her master. Shakti surrounds and completely envelops the Supreme Lord, and yet the Lord's presence is constantly dynamic and perceived by all devoted souls, because in every such situation, Krishna asserts himself as the Supreme Personality, the Lord of Shakti. So in other words, he's surrounded by this Shakti, but the surrendered soul can still see Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Means all the pastime, everything, all the energies, everything is all that. But it's still, you can perceive the Shakti Man, because even like we said, his manifestation, his form, right? Name, form, qualities, pastimes. Like as mentioned, certainly the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna convincingly show the power of Shakti at play. So that means the form that you see is still Shakti, is the manifestation. But the devotee can still see Krishna, because he's the one who, it's his desire, he's the free-willed one who wants to do this and that, and that all the energy is being employed to please him. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is there's a difference and non-difference. He's the one that's enjoying the Shakti.
So unless he reveals himself, it's not possible to
see
him.
No, not possible.
Because it's all Shakti.
Yeah. So when he means, in other words, what you're seeing, that's him, but at the same time it's his energy. So understanding, appreciating him means he reveals himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the, and then even appreciating the spiritual is only by the grace of the energy. Otherwise, one only sees Maya. So one will always see energy. It's just whether you're seeing internal or external. So if it's external, then the tendency is you don't see Krishna. But if it's internal, then you can see Krishna. You know, because it's his energy, so therefore, you know, it's not a problem. Yes.
So then impersonals, what do they see?
An effulgence. At best. And generally it's explained that's the effulgence of his toenails, and that even that they have a problem approaching. So.
Because
there's no manifestation.
Yeah.
So therefore, Shakti and Shaktiman are undiscerned. So basically all it is you see the effulgence of the Shakti and Shaktiman. So that's why they don't. That's why the materialists can't see. Like even sometimes, you know, I've heard devotees talking about they'll bring, you know, some person or bring their parents to the temple and show them around. They take them in to show them the deities, and then after they were in the temple room and they go out, and the, you know, the mom comments about the nice flower arrangements at that end of the room and stuff like that. They didn't even see the deities. All they saw were the flowers. You know? So, yeah, so like that. So the point is by his grace, then you can see him. So devotees are going and appreciating Krishna in his deity form, or Krishna in his pastimes and that. That's because Krishna is revealing himself. Right? Because the knowledge is coming down, the potency, through the parampara. And we're surrendering to Krishna through that process. So Krishna being pleased, he reveals himself. That's why we don't make a distinction. That's his point here, is that, you know, my son, that is certainly a very difficult problem. It seems you plan to end the misery of this old man with your sharp arrows of tricky arguments. Because you're getting into that. But the point is the devotees don't do that. That form that's there is Krishna, because Krishna reveals himself. But then they'll get into it. No, but then that's the energy, so who's Krishna? You know, get into all that kind of jazz. And so it's just saying, these are tricky arguments. But for the devotee, they don't have those problems. It's very simple. That's why if you're qualified, it makes sense. And if you're too much into logic, it'll never make sense. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So the devotees are seeing Krishna. And so it works. But as we see, the Mayavadis, they can't see. Because they think what they're seeing is material. So they never actually see. The devotee sees, and they know this is Krishna's spiritual. So they see Krishna. The Mayavadis don't see Krishna. Even though he's standing there, they still can't see. Because even though they can see a form there, you know, but that they'll take, this is a material form, so they're not actually seeing Krishna. You know, it's like when Krishna comes into the arena in Mathura, everybody sees completely differently. But it's still the same person, but they're all seeing differently because of their qualification. You know, because he reciprocates with how you surrender.
The Jiva sees this energy without Krishna, and he sees Mahamaya, Krishna does not reveal himself.
Yeah.
This is internal, and Krishna may reveal himself for him.
Yeah. Yeah. If you approach Krishna through the internal potency, then he's pleased with that, because that's the natural position. So therefore, then you can see Krishna. Yeah. But the point is because we've already explained that him and his energies are non-different, therefore, you're seeing him. You know what I'm saying? If the rich man takes you out on this yacht and it's got all kinds of opulence and nice things going on, you know, okay, so this is his yacht, this is the money, but what about, you know? No, it's all part of the same thing. The rich man and all the opulence, and it goes together. It's not a problem. You consider this to be him. You know what I'm saying? Because rasa is what's important. In tattva, you can get into all these fine little points like that. But he's saying, but the point is all of this, the tattva is there so that we know the difference between ourself and God, and between the material energy and the spiritual energy. Because otherwise we don't quite have that correct. We think we're God, and, you know, this was the place of perfection. You know, and then spiritual means it's, you know, basically impersonal or void. You know, so the philosophy is there to get all that correct. Right? To understand his possession, understand the relationship. But relationship is tasted by acting within the relationship. So I'm the servant, he's the master. You function within that, then it works. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, oh, when I get to the spiritual world, I have my spiritual form, then I can interact, you know, in a relationship. No. The general relationship is servant. Right, he's the master. All others are servants. Right, that's it. Remember, there's a Chaitanya Charitamrita verse that says, you know, Krishna is the master, all others are servants. Yes. So he is the master, that's it. There isn't anyone else. Everyone else is servant. You know, and then when we look at it technically, all there is servant is actually Radharani. Everyone else is just assisting her. Right? Because everyone else is her expansive, so she's actually the servant. Is that? It's not a matter, means that one is able to do anything, that's only by Krishna's potency. So anything being able to be done is by Krishna's potency. Now the point is whether you're the one supposed to be doing that or not, whether it's authorized. You know what I'm saying? Even a thief is stealing something, it's still only by Krishna's potency that he can do that. Right? Because otherwise, you know, we don't have that potency. Right? Does that make sense? So then, the idea is that then how to appreciate that it's by Krishna's grace all this is going on. You know what I'm saying? So it's by Krishna's grace something's happening and someone can do something. But at the same time, is the devotee is willingly taking part in that. So they also get credit. So credit goes to Krishna because it's his potency. The Krishna, you know, in his will. But at the same time, as the devotee gets credit for being involved. Does that make sense? Like Krishna's already arranged to kill everyone on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but Arjuna's doing it, so Arjuna gets credit for being, you know, the warrior who's doing that. Does that make sense? Because see, is Krishna? There is no such thing as a competition or rival. Does that make sense? So therefore, you don't. It's more fun giving the credit to the devotee than taking the credit. You know, unless there's something in the rasa with the devotees that they're giving credit, then it has some meaning. But actually, that's not what's so important. Because you see, in generally in the past tense, as they, you know, move into more sweeter, he takes less and less the prominent position. But it's his potency acting through them, but it's not like you're there with little strings attached to you. You know, it's not like this kind of a thing.
Yeah, but how can you tell whether they're just trying to imitate Krishna as the controller, or whether Krishna is actually, like, and Krishna's allowing that because of their will, like, he's giving them free will to do that, that's their desire, or whether Krishna is actually acting through them as a medium?
But the point is everything going on is Krishna's potency, so everybody already is a medium for everything. But it's a matter of whether you're using that mediumship to please Krishna or to please yourself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So that's going anyway. The bug is flying. How is the bug flying? It's by Krishna's potency. You know what I'm saying? But Krishna, even all that is there, Krishna as a person is separate from that.
How can you tell if somebody's trying to please Krishna or trying to please themselves?
That is the definition of pure devotional service. Means is being done conscious of Krishna's favorable for Krishna, and that then that endeavor is free from karma and jnana. So that's what you use to measure.
But you can't see that externally, right? Only that person knows.
There's symptoms. Does that make sense? the symptoms. Like, you can't see the bottom of the milk, but you can see the top.
Yeah, but you can't say that every single devotee that's giving instruction is not right and you shouldn't listen to them just because they're not impure and low devotional service. But that doesn't mean that every instruction is going to be without any personal motive.
No, but the point is if the activity is appropriate and it's approved by the, you know, it's an approved activity that's appropriate for the situation, you perform it in the proper attitude, you'll get the benefit. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The jiva is able to perceive the supreme and independent Lord only when he is under the shelter of Shakti and abides by her wishes. Right? Because if she is the manifestation of everything, then only when you work under her direction, then are you going to actually be able to see Krishna. Right? Because she can see Krishna. She knows the difference between herself and Krishna. So you can see that when one is under her shelter. Right? So when it was under the shelter of the external potency, you don't see Krishna. When it was under internal potency, then you see Krishna. Is that? Therefore, the conditioned soul cannot independently penetrate the coverings of Shakti and directly meet the Supreme Lord. However, when the surrendered jiva is engaged in prema bhakti, she ingresses through the coverings of Shakti and sees Krishna face to face. Bhakti is purely saturated with Shakti, and it is therefore female and embodied as Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi is harmoniously devoted to the Swarup Shakti of Sri Krishna, and thus provides intimations of the supreme lordship of Sri Krishna as the sole Purusha. Thus, through the Shuddha Bhakti, the jiva may experience the virile dalliances and dynamism of the self-willed Sri Krishna. Right? So in other words, through pure devotion, then one can appreciate the masculine principle. Otherwise, then not. So it's not by intellect. It's not by other things. It means we have an understanding of it's there, but it's actually the experience is only by the grace of devotional service. Right? Because Bhakti Devi is serving the Swarup Shakti. Right? It's the Swarup Shakti that expands everything. So when we under bhakti are serving the internal, the Swarup Shakti, then we'll be able to appreciate Krishna. Does that make sense? So then that means to whatever degree you're doing that, to that degree you're appreciating Krishna. Right? And Krishna being unlimitedly wonderful, even if you just appreciate a little bit of that, it's still something serious. Does that make sense? A drop of reality has more substance than a whole ocean of illusion. Does that make sense? So all the material consciousness in the world, you know, piled up in great piles, still doesn't equal just one fraction of a portion of a drop of just being Krishna conscious. Does this make sense? So therefore, it means even for the newest person, it's still what they appreciate of Krishna is still wonderful. But as they progress, it gets more and more and more wonderful because they're able to appreciate more and more. Does that make sense? It's not that, oh, when you get to that platform, then only. No, from now, something. But here, we're talking here that full appreciation. Yes? No?
Maharaj, we understand that Swarup Shakti is Srimati Radharani, and now my question is that who is the Bhakti Devi, the personality of Bhakti Devi, and she's subservient to Swarup Shakti?
No, you have to have a name.
No, I just
you
got to
have
know,
a name here. You want a name.
The personality, who is that personality?
I'm not going to say Cinderella. Yes, no? Um, I don't know. I haven't come across a name. Maybe we'll come across a name. But even if you knew the name, would it make any difference?
It will make my picture more complete because I never figured it out who's the Bhakti Devi, because sometimes...
No, but the point is you serve the devotees, Krishna, and devotees through devotion. So it doesn't matter if you know who the person is or not, that's still what you use. Right? You know what I'm saying? Yes.
There's a story about Narada Muni. He kind of discovered that Kali Yuga was happening and he found Bhakti Devi lamenting that her son's Gyan and Vairagya were not being properly...
Yeah, but I'm saying she's only known as Bhakti Devi.
Yeah.
You know, so if that's her name, is that a problem?
I'm satisfied.
Okay. So you have Lalita Devi, so you have Bhakti Devi. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
That's clear.
Yeah? No?
I had a similar question. I'm glad I called it.
Okay.
Some people say Brinda Devi, Bhakti Devi, and they say the same thing, that it's the same person, but some people say Brinda Devi, Bhakti Devi, separate.
I mean, it's two different names that's being said. You know, you're saying Vrindavan Dham, Mayapur Dham, you're saying, you know, all these different things. So it's Bhakti Devi, you know, like that. It's separate personalities. The bhakti is the combination of Samvins and Ladini. Like that. Because when that's there, then Sandini reveals. Like that. That's the mechanics of it. Okay. Vrajana, a distinct entity that exists beyond the parameters of Shakti, would indicate Brahman, as mentioned in the Upanishads. Raghunath Das Babaji. The Brahman described in the Upanishads is without will and desireless, whereas Sri Krishna, the Supreme Person described in the Upanishads, is self-willed and dynamic. Thus the two principles are clearly distinct from one another. Brahman is impersonal, without form. Sri Krishna, though separate from his Shaktis, is nevertheless personal and with a transcendental form. He possesses a divine personality and the autocratic liberty to enjoy and utilize his Shaktis without restriction. Indeed, Sri Krishna and his Shakti are simultaneously different and non-different from one another. The Shakti of Sri Krishna, which reveals Krishna, is also directly Krishna himself. Yet, simultaneously, the Hladini Shakti of Sri Krishna, Srimati Radhika, asserts herself as the consort of Krishna with a separate identity. Sri Krishna is the worshipable Lord, to be served by all, and Srimati Radhika, the supreme Shakti, is his maidservant. Their separate identities manifest the distinctions in their individual nature. Right? So in other words, they're different, but at the same time the same. So the Shakti, is, even though they're manifesting the form of Krishna, is non-different from Krishna. So it is Krishna. The form of Krishna is Krishna. So how you appreciate the difference between Krishna and his Shakti is not by this kind of a discussion, but is by the discussion of Krishna in his pastimes, how he behaves, and how Srimati Radharani, how she behaves. There you can see the difference between the Shakti and the Shaktiman, the mood in that. Because he mentioned here, the virile dalliances and dynamism of the self-willed Sri Krishna. Self-willed Sri Krishna. Right? So that's the masculine aspect. Right? And then how the maidservant functions and how that all works. That's then how you see appreciate the difference. Right? Because the other problem is we want to say it's this or that, but it's this and that. That's the problem. We're trying to say, no, it has to be this or that. But no, it's this and that. So that's why this approach won't get the answer that one is looking for. Right? Because he is not there. Because otherwise he's saying, yes, okay, there's the Shakti. And if the form is the Shakti, that means the Purusha is beyond that Shakti, so that means he's formless, right? So we again go back into the Smarta perspective. Right? It means he's come so far and then it comes right back around at the beginning again. Right? And so then he's saying, no, it's that form of Krishna is Krishna because he and his energy are non-different. That is his form. But at the same time as, you know, his energy is there, but that manifestation of the difference between him and his energy is manifest as him, as Shaktiman, and Radharani is the Srup Shakti. Like that. Their interaction, that's where you see it. And then from there it expands into the everything in the creation. Does this make sense? Rajanath, independent will and the position as the supreme enjoyer confirm the Purusha status of Sri Krishna. What then is the desire of Srimati Radhika? Right, so independent will and the supreme enjoyer. Right? Because will is what you want to get done, what you want to do, so that means the controller and enjoyer. So, right? But he doesn't look at it as controller, as his supreme will. Right? We look at it as controller. Right? Because our will doesn't seem to work. So we're always trying to get in control of everything. Try to impose our will upon it. But Krishna, just by desiring it, it happens. So therefore, he doesn't have this problem. That's why he never has the problem of somebody is going to be a rival. Right? It's not his problem. You know.
It is the other person.
Yeah, the other person's problem. Yeah, yeah. That they're trying to.
Like Pondraka, right?
Yeah, yeah. Pondraka is there. He's got his arms on, and give me those things back. Oh, you want? Okay, no problem. You know. So then what is the desire of Srimati Radhika? Raghunath Das Babaji. The desire of Srimati Radhika is always subordinate to the desire of Sri Krishna. She has no aspiration or activity independent of Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna alone is the master of his will, and the desire to serve Krishna and to be obedient to his will is the desire of Sri Radhika. She is the full-fledged embodiment of Shakti, the Adya Shakti, and Sri Krishna is the Purusha, who is the enjoyer, lord, and fountainhead of this Shakti. At this point, Raghunath Das Babaji became silent and contemplative, whilst Rajanath felt elated beyond words. He quickly stood up, offered prostrate obeisances, took permission to leave, and then departed for his residence in Bilva Pushkarini village. A gradual but definite transformation was taking root in the consciousness of Rajanath. His grandmother especially took note of this, and thus in earnest she busied herself to find him a life partner. Right? Because otherwise he gets too far over this way, then he'll be out there with the Babajis, right? Yet, Rajanath was not in the least concerned about all these mundane happenings. Day and night, he now pondered deeply over the teachings of Raghunath Das Babaji. When he had assimilated the dictums and philosophy properly, he would gladly return to Raghunath Das Babaji at Srivasangana for a further dose of this esoteric nectar and the jubilant consumption of every word. Right, so he would contemplate for some time until he could appreciate it nicely, right? Then he would go back and then hear more. Okay, summary of chapter 15. Nitya Dharma, Sambandabhideh and Prayojan. Now part 3, the Jiva. Right, because now we've dealt with all the aspects of Krishna. Right, Krishna is the absolute truth, Krishna as the source of all energies, and Krishna as the embodiment of rasa. Right? So now all three aspects of Krishna have been dealt with. So now, part 3, now we go into the next aspect is the Jiva. Today, Vrajanath came earlier than usual to Srivasangana. After the Sandhya Artik, he left and walked southwards with Raghunath Das Babaji to Godrum. Along the way, the elderly Babaji noticed the unrestrained tears streaking down the cheeks of Vrajanath. Touched by the feelings of tender, caring love he had developed for the young devotee, the kindly Raghunath Das Babaji asked, "My son, why do you weep?" Vrajanath turned to his master and replied softly, "Master, your wonderful association and instructions have overwhelmed me. Material existence and family life seem vacuous and meaningless, and I am now anxious to receive the shelter of Sri Gauranga's lotus feet. My mind is feverish with one single question: who am I in truth, and why have I taken birth in this world?" That's an interesting word, vacuous. But that's what what do you call it? The Buddhists are trying to come to that vacuous state. Yeah. So, but at some point, when one appreciates how the material world has nothing to offer, then one's already in that state. So I'm not sure why they consider it so great, you know, like that. You know, people get really upset when they come to that platform, but they think it's something to aspire for, right? So. No? Yeah. So that's the trick, right? That's how Krishna tricked them all. Raghunath Das Babaji, "Wonderful. Your question has sanctified my heart. When good fortune strikes a person, this is the first query. Hear now the fifth verse of the Dasamula Shiksha and try to understand the purport." Out of the flames of a fire fall innumerable tiny sparks. Similarly, from the rays of the transcendental sun, Sri Hari, emanate millions of minute particles of consciousness, the infinitesimal spirit souls, the jivas. The jiva is non-different from the supreme, Sri Hari, and yet simultaneously is distinct from Sri Hari. The eternal difference between the Supreme Lord Sri Hari and the jiva is that the Lord is always the master and controller of the Maya Shakti, whereas the jiva, even in his liberated state, by his very constitutional nature, is vulnerable to come under the sway of the Maya Shakti. Right? Because one's come to this position from the liberated platform. Right? It's not when one's liberated, one's in control of Maya. Because it's from the liberated platform that we came to Maya. Does that make sense? Because liberated platform simply means I can see the spiritual and the material. It doesn't mean I control them. It simply means I can see them both. Right? Condition means I just see the material. Right? Being situated in prema, I only see the spiritual. But liberated means I see both. So it's not that when you become liberated, then you become the master of Maya. Right? These are the tricks that Maya uses for these impersonalists and these tantrics Buddhists and all that kind of thing, is that they all think that when I come to the liberated platform, I'll be in control, right? Like the Shaktas were saying, now I'm the servant of Maya. She's like mother. But when I become liberated, I'll become the husband of Maya, right? So the Buddhists basically work on the same principle. They don't say it so eloquently, but that's their idea. So when you come to that platform, then you control the Shaktis. But the point is Shaktis allow you to control them. That's how they control you. Right? That's the trick. Right? Is that make sense?
Well, as soon as you try, you get more entangled.
Yeah.
Whereas the things that you own end up owning you.
Things that you own end up owning you. Yeah.
That's when you're seeing materially. That's the Shakti you're trying to control.
You're trying to control. It means you're trying to enjoy the energy of the Lord separately. You're not seeing it as an opportunity to serve the Lord. You're seeing it on its own outside of that. You know what I'm saying? So even just appreciating the spiritual potency not connected to Krishna is still a material consciousness. Though you're appreciating the internal manifestation, but your consciousness is actually material because you're seeing it separate from Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Rajana, this is an extraordinary philosophical conclusion. I am eager to learn the Vedic scriptural evidences supporting this view. For me, the verdict of the Supreme Lord, as you have just given, is sufficient. But if we can provide a quote from, for example, the Upanishads, then the common man is bound to accept the truth of the Lord's words. Because right? these are, in other words, the Dasamul as given by Lord Chaitanya. It means he didn't necessarily put it together in this form, but this is all of the philosophy spoken, and the Acharyas have taken that and put it together in these 10 points. Does that make sense? So in other words, through the devotees, he reveals his own philosophy. Right? Because Chaitanya Charitamrita means it's the discussions between the Lord and the devotees. So that's how we know. We know through the devotees the Lord. Huh? Yeah. Like when Prabhupada did the summary of the Chaitanya Charitamrita as teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's just 5 conversations. It's the 5 main conversations of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's actually the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's what he taught to the devotees. Mm-hmm. Okay. Raghunath Das Babaji. There are numerous supporting shlokas in the scriptures. I will quote a couple, so kindly pay attention. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad we find, just as innumerable sparks cascade out of a flame, similarly from Sri Krishna, who is the Atma, the universal soul, the Jivas emanate, who are his separate parts and parcels. Because it says Krishna only speaks Veda. Right? So that was what Lord Chaitanya spoke, and now we see what the Upanishads see. It, same thing. Like that. The Jiva has access to 2 places, both of which he may seek, his material world and the spiritual realm. He is situated in Swapnasthanam, the dream-like 3rd state, on the margin of these 2 worlds. From that middle position, he is able to see both the material and spiritual worlds. Right. So the point is because that's his nature. At any time, he can see both. Right. But the point is to see this, the internal potency, the spiritual world, that has to be in contact with the devotees. So only through the devotees, then we get that understanding of the spiritual world. And having heard that, now we can see both. Then it's just up to us which one we would prefer to see. Right. So does that make sense? Yeah, so the tendency is we kind of, by default, like to see here, you know, when it gets... means, in other words, seeing the spiritual is nice until, you know, all the responsibilities come up, and the material is great as long as, you know, the problems don't come up. So we try to find that kind of balance between the two, you know? Like that, you know? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, Maharaj? When the jiva is on the liberated platform, is a matter of interest where it's looking.
Yeah.
Whether up or down.
It's basically means, if you look at it by location, then you can say up and down. But actually, the it's not a matter of up and down. It's a matter of, do you see it in connection with the Lord or not? That's all. Right. Just like you have the saintly person here. And they're seeing everything in relation to the Lord. They're in the spiritual world. Even though they're moving through the location of the material world. Right? But like the demon is coming into Vrindavan. But he's looking at it for his own purpose of controlling and enjoying. So therefore, he's actually seeing the material world. Though he's doing it from the vantage point of the location of the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of perspective on which one you're seeing. Because both. The point is, the Lord's energy is there and the Lord's there. So if you see the Lord and the energy, it's the spiritual world. If you only see the energy, it's the material world. You can't just see the Lord and not the energy. Right? Because he's revealed through his energy.
But in that state, you'll be Atmarama, right? There'll be nothing to be seen. I mean, without the manifested energy, we don't know Krishna.
Yeah, you'd say it's Atmarama, but that's like the impersonal, because there, the internal is not manifest. The Lord and his potency are, you know, basically just manifesting as one, because there's no specific qualities or activities. because it's in the activities that you see the difference. Right. Does that make sense? It's an activity you say this is masculine. These activities you say this is feminine. Does this all make sense?
Yeah, you bust that, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. We've kind of come to a elements in the philosophy that are kind of like beyond what we've thought about. So, you know, it just kind of gets this.
Yeah.
Pleasant. You know, just
the days. What?
Yeah. Like that.
Varnashram. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like Rajana, we have to contemplate.
Yes, of course. Of course. No, but it's just interesting is that, you know, how much is there that we don't necessarily think about. You know, so, yes.
So, just to... the only position that the jiva can fall down from is a liberated platform, is that correct?
Yeah, because once you're fallen, you can't really fall from there.
And from Aloka, there's no fall.
No, there's no fall.
Now it's complete.
Yes. See, the point is, but Goloka means prema. When you've come, when you've taken note of the internal as opposed to the external, and then cultivate that mood that is there in the eternal associates of the Lord, then you come to prema. So then you become situated in Goloka. So you won't fall from there, because then prema means you only see things in connection with the Lord. Right? But from that neutral state, that liberated state, that's where you can see them both. And you're neutral. You can see this or see that. You don't really make so much that you don't necessarily have a value of one or the other. The internal, that's the natural state. The external, that's the not natural. Because dead matter is not of interest to the soul. It's the relationships. Does that make sense? So to just see the Lord's energy and just be contemplating the energy on its own, does that make sense? So that's why we take it here that knowledge, you know, that is doing that, analyzing the, you know, material energy is higher sciences, but actually the lower. That's why the scientists are put on the lowest level of consciousness. They're anamoy, because all it is I can see it with the senses, and what you can do with it with the senses and interact, that's their whole perspective. So they're the lowest consciousness. You know what I'm saying? You know, the you know, mildly religious housewife, you know, sitting there washing dishes is actually on a higher level of consciousness than the quantum physicist. You know? Like that. So that's the funny thing, you know. It appears that's the real thing, but that's what got us here. So that's for us, is the science is only useful if it's used in devotional service. Otherwise, science on its own, as we were, you know, we're coming across, what is it? Not yesterday or day before? This whole thing of analyzing the energies. But that's actually how that distraction, you know, where we... Oh no, that was actually this morning. That was this morning. Where we get so much distracted by how the yoga process, or how this, or these subtle things of the universe and all that, but that's the whole thing. It's not about us and the cosmos, it's about us. You know, and then when we breathe out, you know, then the whole cosmos is there. It's just an expansion of us. We just see it like that. So we're still the center. You know, it's just that I never thought of it that way. I was just, you know, me and, you know, going to work and the family and the house. But if it's the whole cosmos, hey, that's even better. You know, so you know, be the center of the, you know, why even the universe, the cosmos, right? You know, it's like even better, right? You know, so that's the problem. Is we're trying to see things how I can enjoy from this, rather than how does this serve Krishna. That's the
Whereas those gopis who didn't go, they were doing the washing, they were like, I like this, I like these Ujjayinis.
Yeah, basically, they're getting distracted by those. It means they think of Krishna and everything, otherwise they wouldn't be there. Yeah. But it's not samadhi, right? It means it's less, because there's five levels. So when we're talking about that, and those five levels means that also goes on here, but the degree we're talking about there, it starts there, right? Means meditation, you know those levels of meditation.
Five levels of bhava, you're saying?
No, this is within Smaranadasa, means the third one, which is remembrance. There's five levels. It's the same five levels that the yoga system says. You know, that you're sometimes thinking and more thinking and then like this, and then it's, you know, thinking, and then when that thinking becomes intense, that's samadhi. Right? You know, say that with all those smriti, anusmriti, all these different terms. So then when that's fully absorbed just in Krishna, that's when one's qualified to then go and be with Krishna. But until then, the tendency is one can get association of the eternal associates if there's an interest. But generally is when that interest is dynamic. But so the point is being in the spiritual world, you can still be distracted by the facilities. You know what I'm saying? So the tendency is if one understands this, then one's very focused and serious, one doesn't have that problem. Right? But unless one understands that, one might. You know, means you have a place that has no material problems. You know, it can't be bad. Right? So that's the thing, is one gets distracted by that. You know, because otherwise, if you're not thinking of Krishna, what are you going to think of? Right, there's Krishna or his energies, right? So you're not dealing with the external energy; you're dealing with internal energy. But the point is that you're not, if you're not thinking of that energy in connection with Krishna, it's still not on the ideal platform. It's still in that middle state. Does that make sense? Someone's trying to come to the position where one is always thinking of the Lord, always absorbed in the Lord. So if we can do that here before going there, then that's already done. It's not that whatever I do here, it doesn't matter when I get there, I have to start from the beginning. No, it's however far you get here is where you start there. Does that make sense? Right? So if someone through meditation has already come to that platform, right, and then associating with devotees come to the platform of love of God, he doesn't even have to go to Gokul, because he's already done that, so he just goes straight to Golok. So it's rare. Prabhupada says it's very rare. So the generally thing is there, but however far you've gotten there is where you start. But in any case, it doesn't matter, even if it's not very much here, if you get there by remembering Krishna at the time of death, then, you know, it works fairly quickly, because you're on the liberated platform, right? We have a problem here because of our conditioning. There's no conditioning, so things move very rapidly, right? So that's why it's arranged like that. So then, for those who weren't that those who are serious, go to the rasa dance. Those who are almost completely serious get stopped and then go to the rasa dance. And those who are a little less than that get stopped and they don't go to the rasa dance. But they become perfectly qualified. They go to the next rasa dance, right? Does that make sense?
Next train.
Yeah, it's the next train. Yeah. So now it's just the trick is whether they go every 10 minutes or every 15 minutes or you understand? So the point is now they're qualified. So this is the way Yoga Maya arranges it. So then they get serious. Because otherwise it's going there and Krishna's there at night, but then when it comes to, you know, the point of being able to go to Krishna and all these other, then it becomes so intense that it comes to the platform of perfection. So then they qualify to go to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. You had something?
I was just going to ask, when you said there are different methods, even in the spiritual world, and there's room for progress, I guess, there as well. Is it from those middle platforms that the entity actually falls?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Means that's the point. Means you fall from there, you go back to there. It means that's the point where you either move forward or you come here. But once you've been here, you won't come back here. right? Because you won't make that mistake. But it's just maybe you're not as absorbed in Krishna as ideal. You see? So it's that middle state, that's Gokul. That's the platform of bhava. Right? Because bhava is not material, but it's not prema. You know what I'm saying? Like a bud. It's not a flower, but at the same time, it's a potential flower. Like that. So that's the position. So from there, then if we don't, you don't know any different, then you become absorbed in the facilities. So then you come here. Because here it's all about facilities. Right? So when you figure out that doesn't work, then you become interested in Krishna consciousness. So then you take that up, and then when you again go back there, then your focus will be on Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then one will progress towards prema.
And so from that platform, is prema then inevitable? Or?
Yes.
It is.
It's just a matter of time, that's all. You know, if you're more serious, it's quicker. If it's less serious, it takes a little longer. Right? Does that make sense?
Depending on your mood, then you go to the local country, right? If you see what the opulence
means, you go to the manifestation of that realm within the material phenomena, wherever it is that you're interested in. You know what I'm saying? So if you want to go to Vaikuntha, you'll appear in that place where the Lord's pastimes, Vaikuntha pastimes, are taking place here. You want to go to Braj, it's where Krishna's pastimes of Braj are taking place here. If you want to go to Dwarka, it's where those pastimes are taking place here. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're interested in Braj, so then when that happens, then we go there. Right? And then from that you develop the love of following the footsteps of the eternal associates. You develop that kind of love they have. Therefore, you go to Goloka, that place in Goloka, that where they have that. So, if you're associating with the Vrajavasis, then you go to Vrindavan, right? Like you mentioned, there's those different realms. You have the that Mathura Dwarka kind of scene, and you have Vrindavan, and then you have Swetadweep. So Swetadweep takes care of Navadweep, Puri, all those kind of aspects. The whole thing can be called Swetadweep. The whole thing can be called Goloka. But it can also be specific. Goloka means Dwarka, you know, like that. And Swetadweep means Navadweep. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, or we say, yeah.
Once I heard someone saying that if you realize your original identity through the sankirtan movement, you have two altars. You could see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you can also see.
Yeah, no, you'd be in both pastimes. But it's not a problem. Just like you have Rupa Goswami and Rupa Manjari, they're in both pastimes. Same persons in both. So that's not a problem. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it automatic then that depending on your eternal relationship with Krishna, is it automatic that you turn to that eternal relationship? I mean,
that would be the normal, natural thing, but it means you can get attracted by something else, but why would you? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's technically possible, but it's generally why would you? You know, saying you like strawberries, you could like bananas, you know, but it's not that you have to. You know, it's always, well, no, but if I have this one, what if I want something else? It's always the nature of, keeping your options open. But it's like, the point is you have a nature, why would you, if you like strawberries, you get strawberries, you're happy. You're not eating strawberries, and well, he's got bananas. Why does he have bananas? What's special about bananas? It's, nobody cares. Right? You know, Mother Jashoda is not thinking about going out and, playing hopscotch with the coward boy. She's not thinking about it. You know? You know what I'm saying? The coward boys, don't want to be off with the gopis. You know, it's just, they're happy. They're satisfied. So the normal thing is just to go back to one's natural position. Is that okay?
No, I was just
The reason Nidai Chaitanya couldn't readily relate to his experience was that he was, cowherd.
No, it's the point is that you're under one guru, you don't accept another guru without this guru's permission. So with him, it was a matter of etiquette. Etiquette hadn't been properly followed because he had given instructions of his sadhana, and then now he's in Vrindavan, now he's getting different. He's practicing differently, like that. So when Srimati Radharani came and said, "Hey, I'm the one that told him this," then it's okay, cool, no problem. we have no problem. Like that. It was just a matter of etiquette. Yes.
The example that you just used about the strawberries and the bananas, what if you are doing that? What's wrong with you and how can you fix it?
It means actual strawberries and actual bananas.
No. what if you've got the strawberries and you're looking at the other guy going, what's so special about them?
Yeah, but I'm saying, but what's the context of using that? You're already
in the material world.
Yeah, in the material world. Then it's just a matter of, one is you have strawberries, be happy. Because if you're eating strawberries and you're thinking about bananas, you're not going to enjoy the strawberries. And later when you have the bananas, you won't be able to enjoy the bananas because you'll be thinking about the strawberries. So whatever you have, be happy with that. And then if you want to try that, then try it next time. You know what I'm saying? But whatever you have now, be satisfied with it. Otherwise, you'll never be satisfied. Does that make sense? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Plinganam.
Скажи, посмотри, все там было.